Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the center. The National Humanities Center is an independent, nonprofit institute that encourages excellence in scholarship and affirms the importance of the humanities in American life.
Babar is important to me primarily because of the beauty of the illustrations. The themes of the stories are universal, but what I love is looking at that deep blue Mediterranean, looking at a book with my children where the imagery is brought off with such skill that I think of painters ranging from Jan van Eyck to Cézanne.
The Art of Babar, the development of a children's classic, this week on Soundings. My guest is Nicholas Fox Weber, director of the Joseph Albers Foundation. Nick Weber is the author of The Art of Babar, published last year by Harry N. Abrams Incorporated. Since their first appearance in the 1930s, Jean de Brunhoff's illustrated tales of the adventures of a baby elephant named Babar have been published worldwide. Today, they are the basis for a popular HBO children's series. But the stories of Babar also have a serious, and according to some critics, a troubling dimension. Nick Weber, welcome to the National Humanities Center in Soundings. What is a serious art historian doing writing books about Kitty Litt, the story of Babar?
Well, I would question the term Kitty Litt to describe Babar, because one of the things I discovered in working on my book is that some of the greatest enthusiasts of Babar are other people of my age, and in fact, other serious art historians. Uh-huh. Babar is definitely one of those children's books that has great meaning to the adult population. Uh-huh. It has certain themes that appeal particularly to people of any age, victory over adversity, beating the odds, tenacity,
right,
and the quality of its art.
Well, so now you're going to tell me either that we're going to redefine notions of high and low art, or that we're all children at heart, or both.
Not particularly that we're all children at heart here, but that in this case, this is an art book as well. Babar is an art book as well as a children's book, and that it has themes that pertain to people of all ages. To answer your question about how a serious art historian got involved with Babar, I had written a book about the painter Joseph Albers, who's someone who devoted himself diligently to one theme, in that case the interaction of color, and a series of paintings called The Homages to the Square, where for 26 years he went after a particular subject. And then I'd written a book about a figurative painter called Leland Bell, who similarly had worked on a particular composition of nudes for decades, trying to get the most out of it. And then I found another artist, or in this case a father and a son artist, who had found a single theme so rich that they too were able to devote most of their lifetimes to pursuing it, in this case illustrations of an elephant. And what attracted me to Babar was the beauty of the paintings.
Uh-huh. Give me a couple of minutes here, a capsule history of Babar and Jean de Brunhoff. Do I say that correctly?
You say that perfectly correctly. The way that Babar got started is that there was a couple living in a nice country house about 40 kilometers out of Paris, and they had two children, sons Mathieu and Laurent, aged 4 and 5. And one night, Madame de Brunhoff, the mother of the two little boys, decided to tell them a bedtime story. Her younger son had a stomach ache, and she wanted to soothe him and try to get him to sleep. Uh-huh. Madame de Brunhoff had never made up a story for her children before. Generally, she read to them. She read Dr. Doolittle and Winnie the Pooh and a lot of English children's stories.
Now, let me stop you for a moment. This would have been what, in the 1920s, the 1930s?
This was precisely in 1930.
1930. Right. Fair enough.
And so Cécile de Brunhoff made up a story about an elephant. She doesn't know why. I recently interviewed her in Paris. She's now in her mid-80s and very lucid. And I asked her, why did you make up the story of the elephant? She really doesn't know, but she made up a story of a baby elephant whose mother was killed in the jungle. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's an interesting question. Why a mother telling a story to her two young sons told a story in which the beginning had the mother killed.
Oh, now, we'll come back to some of that in just a moment, but give me a sense of what happens in the initial Babar story.
What happened was that she told this story in which the mother was killed, and the baby elephant, who had been riding on her back, then went to the city, which appears to be Paris. The baby elephant went to the city, found some money in Madame de Brunhoff's version, although one of her sons said that as she told it, in fact, the baby elephant stole some money.
Oh, my goodness.
Madame de Brunhoff denies that. She said that when she told it and they were little, mm-hmm. the baby elephant found the money. And with that money, the baby elephant was able to enjoy the good life in the city. He bought beautiful clothing, went to a wonderful patisserie, and then as a result of all of this acquired worldliness, he returned to the jungle after his two cousins, also elephants, of course, came from the jungle to retrieve him. Mm-hmm. He returned to the jungle with all of his good things in a nice car, and and he became king.
King of the jungle.
King of the jungle. Uh-huh. And that was the story. She hadn't even named the elephant. The boys loved the story and fell asleep. Mm-hmm. And the next day, the little boys were so excited about the story their mother had told that they went to tell their father about it.
And here's where the art comes into the story.
Exactly. Their father was a painter, a good, competent painter, not a great painter, somebody working in a little bit in the style of Raoul Dufy, a gentle French figurative painter. Uh-huh. And the boys told Papa the story, and he thought it was quite marvelous, and he decided to do an illustrated version of the story.
All right, now you say he may not have been a great painter, but I have heard you say that he is a first-rate watercolorist.
Once he did Babar, he became a great painter. Uh-huh. As he set about illustrating the story for his children, suddenly his art absolutely caught on fire.
Now, let's work a couple of details into the conversation here, Nick Weber. What about the name, Babar? Have you nailed that down? Does that have some special importance?
Jean de Brunhoff came up with the name. Nobody knows exactly where the name Babar came from. I feel that it may be a combination of bébé, the French word for baby, mm-hmm. and papa, because in fact, Babar took on a very strong resemblance to Papa, to Jean de Brunhoff, mm-hmm. as a personality type. When Jean de Brunhoff illustrated Babar, he put the elephant in his same sort of rain cape. He gave the elephant right. the sort of backpack that he wore, the same sort of hat. Mm-hmm. Babar acquired Jean de Brunhoff's own details. So to answer that question, I think Babar may be a combination of bébé and papa. It also has Eastern overtones. There, in fact, were Indian kings named Babar.
And very exotic sounding.
Very exotic sounding. And there were some tales in India called the Babar Nama. It is unlikely that Babar the elephant was based on Babar the Indian king about whom the Babar Nama was told. But it does have that general Eastern sound, which was appropriate for as exotic an animal as an elephant.
Let's come back to the art. Why are these illustrations, these wonderful watercolors of Babar done by Jean de Brunhoff, why are they important aesthetically? Again, we come back to my question of what is a serious art historian doing looking at children's literature?
Well, they're extremely graceful, for one thing. Jean de Brunhoff had truly a gentle touch as a watercolorist. He knew just the right amount of brushwork to put into a sky. And when he did a second Babar book called The Travels of Babar, he created an image of the Mediterranean that is as rich a use of blues as any watercolorist of this century.
Yeah, one of the just inside the front cover of your book, The Art of Babar, you have this wonderful blue Mediterranean scene where Babar is floating over the sea in a yellow air balloon.
That's
and,
right.
And the ocean beneath him. It is just marvelously evocative.
And Jean de Brunhoff had a terrific eye for detail. So if we look at his illustrations, we, and children particularly, can look at them for ages because the details are so rich. So when Babar takes his car into the French countryside on a two-page spread in the first Babar book, you see cows being milked. You see boats crossing the river. You see fishermen. Every detail is done quite perfectly.
I remember the illustration of the wedding celebration of Babar and Celeste. There is a band, there are dancers. I mean, this incredible sense of elation and happiness, harmony, just flows off of the page from these great watercolors.
And a wonderful feeling for detail. In that wedding celebration, there's a type of French cake called a croquembouche, which is a an assemblage of puff pastries mounded almost like a pyramid. It's a delicious thing to eat, and Jean de Brunhoff did a perfect croquembouche in that first book in 1931, and I noticed that when this is anticipating our story a bit, but that when his son, Laurent de Brunhoff, created a Babar book 2 years ago, there was yet again a marvelous croquembouche.
Tell me about the writing of the text. And here we want to get into some of the underlying issues. Babar might be looked upon as a capitalist plot. There is a decided smack of colonialism in these illustrations and in the story. How did the story evolve? How conscious or unself-conscious was this political dimension as it unfolded?
Well, I don't think that anything was terribly conscious on the part of the creators of Babar. What happened was that Jean de Brunhoff elaborated on his wife's story.
So he wrote the story.
He wrote the story, and he wrote it in French longhand. And the original Babar books have script writing, very much of a school child's manner of writing.
Yeah, it looks like a paste-up kind of thing,
in the
illustrations in your book.
That's how it was done. It was done by collage, and Jean de Brunhoff elaborated on the story. He decided that rather than having Babar find money in Paris, or perhaps steal money in Paris, that Babar would be given the money by an old lady.
Let's pause on some of these characters. For example, you alluded earlier to the fact that the Babar saga begins with the death of the mother.
Yes.
And then you have, again, the old lady, capital O, capital L, who comes along and gives money to Babar. Is there a dimension of ideology, capitalism, decadence inherent in this story, or should we just look the other way and say, come on, give me a break, this is just kiddie lit?
Well, we never know what comes out of the unconscious. Jean and Cécile de Brunhoff did not have these themes consciously in mind. On the other hand, they were picking up on a very prevalent theme of French literature, which is of the free young man going to the city and encountering an older woman.
Sure.
This is a theme that has shown up in French novels.
This is the initiation theme.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's shown up for centuries. She is in part a replacement mother. She also provides all material good. And there's no question that the books are very materialistic in a certain way.
At one point, it says that the old lady gives Babar anything he wants.
Yes.
And before our taping session, I remember you commenting, Nick Weber, about the death of the mother involving freedom for the child. Tell me, for the baby elephant in this case, tell me about that.
Well, that's a theme that certainly did not originate with me. I read Bruno Bettelheim's book, The Uses of Enchantment. And Bettelheim talks about the death of parents becoming the great launching point of a lot of children's stories. Hmm. It's only when the parents die that the hero in the book is free to go off and emerge on his own.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's another aspect to the death of the mother that rather fascinated me. There are many readers of the Babar books who feel that they are quite cold. because Babar's mother is killed. And what does Babar do? He doesn't stay around to mourn. We don't see his grief. We see him going off to the city and enjoying life.
Well, what about Bambi? Bambi's mother is killed, and there is no great scene of grief, is there?
It's a very similar idea. And it happened that at the time that I was writing it about Babar, a horrendous event occurred in the kindergarten class where one of my daughters was a student.
What was that?
A young boy in the class was in an automobile with his mother, and they were in an accident, and the mother was killed. And the child survived almost unscratched. And a prominent local child psychiatrist met with all the parents of Andrew's classmates to discuss the issue of how 5- and 6-year-olds cope with parental death. Because, of course, our children were aware that this young boy's mother had been killed, and all of them were thinking about the possibility of the death of their parents.
And how did this little boy react?
The little boy reacted very much the way that Babar did, which is to say that he could not acknowledge his mother's death. It wasn't that he was cold about it or impervious to it. It's simply that a 5- or 6-year-old child cannot accept the idea of death. It's too much to fathom.
Doesn't have the vocabulary to express it.
It's not just that he can't express it, but that he can't cope with the idea. It's too big an idea and perhaps too unbearable an idea. So I very well remember this child's mother's funeral. The little boy went skipping out of the funeral chapel and tried to throw a frisbee with one of his friends on the front lawn rather than go off to the cemetery. And the child psychiatrist suggested that this is a perfectly appropriate reaction, that this is what children do. The child's instinct is to keep on living and to keep on playing and to continue to make the most of life. That what is most frightening on a certain level is to believe that one's own life is ending, and a 5- or 6-year-old has no instinct to think in that way.
Well, let's pursue, not for the rest of our discussion, but again momentarily, Nick Weber, some of these rather darker dimensions inherent, if not just in the story of Babar, then in all of children's literature. Alison Lurier, who is a novelist and a professor of English, has written a book with, I believe the title is Don't Tell the Grown-Ups, and she's writing about the subversive function of children's literature. Ariel Dorfman, the Chilean novelist, has, I understand he have carried on a dialogue about children's literature, about its darker political implications. Again, is that taking things too far?
Well, I wish I had a chance to carry on a dialogue with Dorfman. I have not, but he wrote rather extensively about Babar, and he felt that Babar was a particular endorsement of capitalism and colonialism.
And what do you think?
I think that there are merits to Dorfman's point of view, but I think that he fails to see the humor in Babar and fails to accept it in light of the times in which it was created. On the other hand, I think that he does have insights. Babar was a four-legged creature living in the jungle. He went to Paris.
Walks upright.
Suddenly, he's walking upright.
Right.
And what does he do? What are his achievements? Well, his main achievements are that he buys beautiful clothing.
Eats good food.
Eats good, wonderful food. He goes to a patisserie. He acquires monogrammed luggage. It seems to be a predecessor of our current obsession with monograms. Suddenly, there are a lot of things with B on them.
Right.
It may be the first designer luggage anywhere in literature. And he acquires a marvelous car. And then he goes back to the jungle.
Now, what about the racial dimension? I want you to talk to me for a moment about that. I understand that in some of the early Babar illustrations, we have some rather ugly racial stereotypes. You're going to tell me that that's just a product of its time and we should overlook it? What?
I'm not saying for a minute that we should overlook it or that it's just a product of its time, but I think... In fact, the major issue is that these were the times. This was the prevalent attitude of the times. The second Babar book is called The Travels of Babar, and in it there are some depictions of savages on an island.
Toni Morrison, the novelist, objected to these, did she not?
She objected to similar images that were created by the son of the creator of the original Babar. Laurent Brunoff took over his father's series, and so Babar quickly came out in England, America, and in France. And after the first Babar, Jean de Brunoff went ahead and created six more Babar books. He died young. He died in 1938 when he was 38 years old, and he left the two little boys, then aged 11 and 12, as well as a younger son.
And Laurent took this thing over.
About 10 years later, Laurent de Brunoff, after the Second World War, was trying to make a go of it as an abstract painter. And in 1946, he recreated Babar. Huh. He did a book called Babar and His Cousin Arthur. The next year, a book called Babar's Picnic. And now he's living in America, in Connecticut, still making Babar books. And that's why there are two authors of Babar, and why Babar is really still alive.
And I take it that the racial dimension that we talked about a few moments ago, this sensitivity has, how has that been handled?
What happened was that in his second book, Babar's Picnic, Laurent de Brunoff created some of the same savage types that his father had created in Travels of Babar. Mm-hmm. These are black stereotypes, a form of illustration that we've seen all too often, even in popular advertising. And in fact, the model for this illustration was a poster that was used all over Paris in the 1930s, which said, Ya bon banyan ya. And it had a picture of a black savage, very large pronounced lips, a really awful stereotype. Mm-hmm. Now, when Laurent de Brunoff did this book, I can only say he wasn't particularly conscious of the stereotype. And a few years later, when Toni Morrison became an editor at Random House, she got a copy of the book, she objected to it, and she asked that it be taken out of print. And I can only say that Laurent de Brunoff's reaction to that is that it was entirely appropriate. Mm. He's embarrassed by the imagery of his own book. Mm-hmm. He is embarrassed by aspects of his father's imagery. And yet, there is a conflict there because some of his father's best paintings, and this is strictly from the point of view of their quality as art, were those images of the blacks in Travels of Babar.
All right, and after a fashion, you're bringing us back here, Nick Weber, to our starting point, which is to say, why should we look at the illustrations accompanying children's literature and take them seriously as art? They have a social dimension. We are free to criticize that, to accept or reject, but they also have a kind of an ongoing aesthetic dimension that is important to somebody like you, which is to say a professional art historian.
This is what led me to Babar, and in fact, there are very different artistic qualities between the two de Brunoffs. Mm-hmm. Jean de Brunoff had this terrific graphic eye. A very well-known art historian, E.H. Gombrich, who's written some of the great tomes on art history, reproduced an image of Babar by Jean de Brunoff in one of his most scholarly books, because he felt that Jean de Brunoff had a rare ability to summarize, that with just a couple of lines, he could denote fantastic differences of expression in the faces of an elephant. Two lines drawn the right way can make a very sad eye. An upturned trunk can make an elephant look excited, even exuberant.
Right.
A trunk going in a different direction can make that elephant look very apprehensive.
Are these the reasons that we continue to look at Babar? Why does Babar continue to be important
and
popular?
I think this is what makes Babar absolutely lasting. That Jean de Brunoff could draw that elephant so well that we all can identify with his emotions. Mm-hmm. But then Laurent de Brunoff came along with quite a different tradition. He was a free abstract painter, very much a post-war sort of painter who was loose in his artwork, who wanted to show a lot of expression in his artwork. His father had been a very careful and precise painter of the earlier school. His father belonged to a world where everything was in its place, and in his scenes, like the ones we discussed of farming and boating and so on, everything is in its place. But
let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation, Nick Weber. Why do you read this stuff to your kids? Why is it important? I want you to be personal for a moment and tell me why you didn't have it read to you as a child.
Well, I did not have Babar read to me as a child because, as my mother told me a few months ago, she felt that Babar was two polo coat and pearl buttons. She thought it was a little bit elitist and upper class. And this did not suit her taste. I read Babar to my children in part to pick their brains. My children were about 5 and 6 years old when I was writing this book, and I would ask them questions about the meaning of things. Mm-hmm. My younger daughter, Charlotte, was fascinated with the idea of being told, as Babar is told by the old lady, you can have anything you want. This is the sort of universal theme that makes Babar so fascinating. Children love to contemplate what it would mean to be told, you can have anything you want.
Why do we watch game shows?
Yeah, I mean, we all like to think about it, too. What if we won the lottery? What would we do with the money? Charlotte told me that she would eat a lot of candy and chew bubble gum at the same time. It was an idea that fascinated her.
Nicholas Fox Weber directs the Joseph Albers Foundation. The program is Soundings. This is Wine Pond at the National Humanities Center. Nick Weber's most recent book is The Art of Babar, published last year by Harry N. Abrams, Incorporated. Soundings on The Art of Babar is available on cassette. Send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip is 27709. Ask for program number 525. That's program number 525. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip is 27709. When writing, please mention the call letters of this radio station. Next week on Soundings, the debate over the canons of American undergraduate education and schooling during the Italian Renaissance. My guests will include John T. Agresto, president of St. John's College in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Paul Grendler of the University of Toronto. Soundings concludes now with Timeline, a weekly cultural retrospective. Happy birthday this week to the Erie Canal. The nation's first major artificial waterway opened for traffic in October. The year was 1825. 61 years ago, panic selling led to Black Tuesday, the beginning of the stock market crash of October 1929. Mid-October of the year 1787 saw the publication of the first of the Federalist Papers, which argued for the adoption of the new American Constitution. Mid-October birthdays include the educator John Dewey, the architect Christopher Wren, the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the athletes Whitey Ford, Gertrude Ederle, and Pele, the musician Dizzy Gillespie, the historian Thomas Babington Macaulay, the violinist Niccolo Paganini, and Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th American president. Finally, this week brings us the anniversaries of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which occurred in October of 1962, of the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, and of the invention of the electric incandescent lamp, which dates back to October of the year 1879. Until next week, this is Wine Pond at the National Humanities Center. Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. The Art of Babar, this week on Soundings. This is Wine Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me for a conversation with Nicholas Fox Weber. Nick Weber discusses his latest book, The Art of Babar. For 60 years, the stories of Babar the Elephant have appealed to children worldwide. But they also have a serious, even a troubling dimension. The Politics of Children's Literature, The Art of Babar, from the National Humanities Center, this week on Soundings.